with our with recording attendance. I will start off. Yes, Jeremiah?
It's noted here in the minutes, Janina.
Okay.
And welcome, Dr. Hamilton. Thanks again for representing LESD.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I will go ahead and call the meeting to order. Let's go ahead and approve today's agenda. If we can have a motion.
I motion to approve, Denise.
I second, Zena.
Let's go ahead and vote. Denise?
Aye.
Zena?
Aye.
Betsy?
Aye.
Dr. Madhu?
Aye.
Janina, aye. Do we have any presentations from the floor on non-agenda items? I'm sorry. We have an additional board member, Kennedy.
Yes. Hi. I had another board meeting that I was finishing up on.
Thank you for being joining us.
Do we have any presentations from the floor?
I think we're good.
All righty.
So I think I'm going to be first tonight. And one of the big things that we're considering this evening is our salary schedule increases. So I wanted to explain the justification for why we're looking at the salary schedules increases that we are. And I wanted to share with you some of our student outcomes because of some of the feedback I'm receiving recently about how are we really doing? We haven't gotten to talk about it as in much depth because of all that we're holding with safety. So I wanted to take some time on that. So with this, I'm going to try to go through this relatively quickly, but if you need to pause me at any point, don't hesitate to pause me. Unfortunately, when I'm sharing screen, I can't see things in the chat. So Jeremiah, if you see anything come through in the chat, you can pause me and jump in with questions. And if not, we'll just keep going. I start with the mission statement because I think that it's really important for our mission statement to shine through in our budget. We don't want a budget that doesn't reflect our priorities and what we're saying is important as an organization and our values. So I don't need to read them to you again, we just did, but it's just really critical for you. And I hope that when you look at this budget presentation, you can say, yes, this does reflect the values and things that we are prioritizing. As a reminder, the priorities for this school year were to strengthen advisory so that every child is a blessing and to implement high leverage instructional best practices. We call this best practices for the new normal, but really focused on checks for understanding and student interactions and our observations in classrooms. These were things that we reflected on our strategic priorities benchmark chart. But if you look at the top of our strategic priorities benchmark chart, you can see that 75% of our cabinet meetings were dedicated to these priorities. And of course, safety took a great deal of our time and attention as well. This is also extremely critical for you to think about how is ECS a little different than some of the schools and the budgets that we compare ourselves to. We have a low student to teacher and a low student to counselor ratio. A lot of schools are getting close to our student to teacher ratio at this moment, not so many high schools, but a lot of schools, especially at the lower grade levels, this has become more of the trend. But our student to counselor ratios are still significantly better than those at other districts. I know of a lot of neighboring districts that have a 1-500 ratio or 1-350 ratio. It used to be 1-750 for the state of California. So this is important. The other thing is that we take all of our students out on camping trips, and this is a good portion of our budget, and our facilities. So unlike traditional districts that get their facilities for free or and frequently lease out spaces, like MBUSD gets several million dollars for leasing out their facilities each year, we have to pay for them, and they're a pretty significant part. Not so much at ECHS Lawndale, thank God, at the moment, but at ECHS Gardena, purchasing that property is a very significant part of our budget. So this is the calendar for the budgeting process, and as you guys may remember, every year around May, we have a May revise where the governor comes back with new proposals. Normally, Tracy would be doing this presentation with me. she's out of the country at the moment, so be kind to me in my efforts to represent her budgeting data. But so this is where the May revise just happened, and we got the governor's shifts for the budget for this year. We have a cost of living adjustment, which is about 6.56%, plus a higher base grant. So if you could remember, we get through LCFF a significant base grant and funding, and then we get supplemental funding for students who are English language learners or qualify for the free and reduced lunch program, and then duplicative funding as well there. So altogether, this adds to up to about 9.8% cost of living adjustment. It may come back in a couple months to be even higher than this, some people are talking about. It may come back. This is the conservative thought at this moment. But what's really important to note is that while it's saying 9.8%, there's a significant STIRS and PERS onus that's placed on districts at a higher rate, a huge increase in that. And our health insurance costs are expected to increase, both because they're expected to increase, but because it's time for us to improve our benefits for employees with children, and I'll explain that a little more later. There's some unrestricted grants, and then there's also the really great news that charter schools are able to use a higher enrollment data as well for our ADA. What you're gonna see in these financials is that there's some funding that's completely goes into general fund, and we have the ability to decide how to spend it, and then there's some funding that's clearly restricted and time limited. And so that's really important for us to think about. How do we plan for what this moment is offering us, which is more funding than we've ever had, but also continue to be sustainable long term and ensure that we're not putting the school in a position where in a few years it's going to be at risk. So when you look at this number, the total budget, I look around here. When I started as a board member 8 years ago, the total for ECS was around $15 million. Now, granted, that's before we had ECHS Gardena, but the significant increase to per pupil funding over these years is something worthy of note. And some of that is very temporary funding. So when you look at this funding that's federal here, you can see that just looking at ECHS Lawndale, it goes from 1.659 to in this school year that's coming to 1.060, and then in the following year down to $387,000. So that's where we think about positions that are temporary, partnerships that are temporary, that can significantly impact what we're doing today and long term, but that we can't count on these dollars to be here forever. So what have we done thus far with this funding? And some of this is, all of this is going to be familiar to you because we've presented to you in the past. We've added social workers, we've implemented additional school psychological services. We implemented a tutoring program that we're contemplating dismantling because its efficacy is questionable. We have an English language program and partnership that we launched this year. We've expanded supports for families. You guys have all been part of that. We've improved our mental health supports to families. We've done emergency funding to families. We've done a lot more computers at home and and have even connected families to workforce development resources and become what we kind of aspired to be long ago, which is this hub that we talked about, the center for our community that connects everyone to resources and goes above and beyond to support the whole community. I talked about technology a little bit, but 100% of our students received Chromebooks and lots of Wi-Fi and technology supports and interventions for technology. And then, as you guys know from Jen's presentations, we have a whole health and safety team, which is led by Jen Fenton and a health and safety coordinator at each site. We've implemented thousands and thousands of tests. Every student has been tested several times a month throughout these months, so that we can ensure that all of our students are safe. We've also had to take on a significant increase in our sub costs because all of the districts have had to deal with student teachers who are out on quarantine, paras who are out on quarantine, and so there's been a huge demand for substitutes throughout the county, and they haven't been able to recruit substitutes at the rate, so they have been paying really high amounts. The sub partners are paying large amounts to the substitutes, which means that we in turn are paying more for subs. We've tried recruiting subs to have long-term subs on site, but every teaching position that we recruit has been a challenging position to recruit for. And I'm sure that I see Betsy nodding her head. This is very much consistent with what we are hearing from charter schools and districts throughout the county and the state. What I can say is that sitting in LACO meetings, I frequently feel really grateful and blessed that there are some of our charter partners that report 60% retention. We have sites that have retained every employee except need to fill in a few new spots. We're doing quite well relatively to other charter schools in terms of retention. What we're also expecting to do with the funding is we're going to be doing additional stipends for teachers to take on leadership roles that, like, for example, developing curricula or strengthening our advisory program now so that it can have long-term effects into the future. And we're hiring two roles. One of them is the environmental education leader or specialist. That's going to be a home office-based role because over the last few years of COVID, we've seen gradually less focus on our environmental education, and that we want to bring the focus back to that and strengthen that program and strengthen Green Ambassadors. But we're also hoping to hire an sort of a outreach and partnership lead. And the reason for that is that as we're seeing a tiny bit more competition, a declining enrollment in all of our areas that we're serving, we want to make sure that we stay ahead of our recruitment efforts so that we have a very robust lottery process and ensure that our student population is representative of the community we serve. But also, there's this program called the Expanded Learning Opportunities Program, which requires us to deliver something like 30 days of additional instruction to all sixth graders. And that's a lot of additional work that I'm hoping we're not going to put on the backs of our teachers and that we can deliver through partners over the years to come. I'm going to pause there and ask if there's any questions about anything that I've presented on until now. Okay. If there are, don't hesitate. So when we look at our existing salaries, and I want to tell you, like, this is a constantly shifting moment. So, like, the salaries that we have here for our charter school partners and people that we compare ourselves to are going to be changed. They're all going through this exact process right now. They just got the May revise. They're looking at how much they can shift as well. But relative to how they're doing, we're doing okay when we look at this. Our teacher salaries look reasonable relatively. But it's really important to note, what's that? Why did that happen? I'm sorry about that slide. Give me one second. It's really important to note that when we compare our budgets and our teacher salaries to the local districts, which we are far more central to and which our teachers compare themselves to more. Like most of the time when a teacher comes to us, they're not saying, well, at Green Dot I could be making this much, but I want to go to a Green Dot. Most of the time charter teachers are thinking of returning to districts because the benefits are better or the salaries are better. And you can see that if we were to just do the 5% cost of living adjustment, it would put us on par with what some of these districts are doing, but not quite at the same level. So what we've proposed here in this 22-23 salary line right here puts us a little bit more on par with local districts. And the reason for this difference is that when we looked at, when we made our last salary schedule shift, we did so with a focus on increasing first-year teacher salaries so that we could recruit more teachers that are coming in. And as a result, we didn't focus as much on the tenure phase of our teachers. And at this point, we were starting to see teachers who were at this level of the 6 to 10 year range wondering, would it be better for me to go to a local district? So this proposed salary schedule will put us on par with some, but not all. It's really important to see that MBUSD and Lawndale Elementary School District are significantly ahead of where this puts us, but it puts us on par with most of the rest of the local districts. Lawndale is an elementary school district, and so the ADA for Lawndale is a little higher because elementary schools get a higher concentration grant than middle schools. Our high schools also get a higher concentration grant than middle schools, but right now the ratio of our students in middle and high, it means that we are a little bit lower on ADA, but it's really important to note that for us to make a shift to align with Lawndale would be really challenging. But this does sort of set us up to be competitive both with all the charter schools and with the rest of the local districts. LAUSD is extremely complicated, but they have a point system. And what happens with the point system is that you don't necessarily need to get a master's degree externally. They give you allow you to get points while you're teaching there regularly through credits. And a lot of teachers move up more quickly, and LAUSD is becoming more tempting to our teachers for that reason. And so as we looked at our salary schedule, it really was important for us to be competitive with LAUSD. The good news is that our Healthy Kids survey data really reflects some positive data about how our teachers and our students feel about our climate, about our school climate relative to LAUSD. So when we went over this data with our teachers, we also went over this stuff. Like there's more to this than just the budget and the salaries, but the level of connectedness and happiness is different. And then also this slide looks familiar to you. Our student-to-teacher ratios are better than most middle and high schools. Our camping investment is significant. And we still have this charter cost that our local districts do not have. Our health benefits for employees are on par for single individuals, which is good. But when we compare ourselves to for families, you can see that we're not doing as well. And so we're at the 42 percentile or the 38 percentile for PPO and HMO. So this is becoming a retention issue as well for our teachers with families, and this is a very, and staff with families, and this is a very growing population amongst DCS, as you can imagine. So this is another thing that we're thinking about and including in our projections for the budget. The good news on that last slide is that our principal and AP salaries are on par with local districts. And so what we're are better than a lot of local charter schools, not districts. So what we're proposing at this time is a 5% increase plus the existing step and column. That means that most of our teachers will experience a 7.5% increase, except for those teachers at the 8 and 10 year range, which might experience as much as a 9 or 10% increase. A 5% increase for all other roles, increased contributions for health benefits for families, and more stipended leadership positions that could have a positive impact on long-term programming. So with that, I'm going to pause. Are there any questions, any concerns, anything that's coming up for any of you before we go into student data for a minute and then hear from our principals? Okay. I'm not good at long pauses, but I hope that was enough time. Julie is kindly going to give a little bit of update on our fund development efforts because that's a question that came up from some board members, and we wanted to keep you in the loop before we go into student data.
All right. Good evening, everyone. So great to see all of you. So just quick development updates. This is sort of an update from the last presentation, the last board meeting's presentation. So we may have mentioned our recent grant and sponsorship wins, which are really exciting, especially these first two around building our partnership or expanding our partnership with the Gardena Willows Wetland Preserve, which is literally 10 minutes from our middle school in Gardena. So it's been really exciting to expand that partnership with the support of the California Coastal Commission, as well as an EPA grant in partnership with Seventh Generation Advisors. We also, Bay Foundation also got a continuation grant of their EPA grant to continue composting efforts at Lawndale, Inglewood, and of course our new high school, which is totally ready to, you know, implement a lot of new greening measures as our newest campus. And then Connecta recently committed to a $100,000 multi-year commitment in support of our capital campaign. Beth and I worked really hard on California State Park's newest initiative, which is an outdoor equity program, which when you read that RFP, it's essentially exactly what we do. So we wrote for $700,000 for each of our campuses, all four sites. So we're fingers crossed, waiting to hear back. So we'll update you when we hear back from that. Chevron has been an ongoing sponsor and supporter from the very beginning. And so they've committed, again, $35,000 this year. And then we talked to them about the capital campaign. So they are open to receiving a larger ask, which we're working on right now. And then, of course, our Gardena capital campaign, as you know, has been ongoing. And so we're very excited that our Growth and Sustainability Committee, many members, which were introduced by many of you, will begin hosting private home events this summer. So Remco Waller and his wife, Marielle, which some of you know, will be hosting the first private home event on June 26th. So if you know Remco and Marielle, please reach out if you'd like to attend. And then, of course, for all of you board members, and I'll be following up with you individually, if you yourself would like to host an event, please reach out, let me know. I will follow up with all of you. And then in terms of prospects, these are a few of the the corporations and foundations that we've been working on and cultivating relationships with and intend to submit a request. So as always, if you have any additional sources, prospects, please let me know and I will follow up with all of you soon. Thank you. Oh, any questions? All right.
I wanted to share a little bit about student outcome data with you all because I got the feedback that some of the student data looks like it's not that great and you're confused by it. Some of the board members were confused by it, and I wanted to sort of go a little deeper into what we look at every year on our strategic priorities benchmark chart. So when you look at this benchmark chart data, it may seem concerning to you because you see a lot of reds and yellows on here, and you see a lot of gaps in proficiency rate and growth rates. But I really want to like hone in on what we're looking at here. This shows how our students in these subgroups, which are African American students at the top, then students with exceptionalities in the second level, and then English language learners, are doing relative to students in the general student population. And so when you look here, you can see that ECHS Lawndale for our African American students has had a good year in terms of English language arts, a good couple of years. They're both their proficiency levels and their the rate at which they're learning, their growth rate is faster than our general student population in English language arts, not so much in math. So you can see those gaps there. When you look at our students who are students with exceptionalities, you can see that there are gaps in proficiency level here for ECHS Lawndale, but not in growth. You can see that at ECHS Lawndale, and you would expect to see a proficiency gap, right, with students with exceptionalities, but that their growth rate has been higher year after year at Lawndale in English language arts. And when you look over here, again, in math, the growth rate is even higher here. You can see also that on our chart that we have a lot of NAs here. And the reason for that is that for the last 2 years at our two middle schools, per conversations with you, we have focused on doing NWEA testing because it was harder for us to do the CASP testing remotely because of the challenges of technology and continuous access. But when you look here on the last one, that's for our English language learners. And again, you can see that our English language learners at ECHS Lawndale have both improved, are at a higher level of proficiency than English language than the general student population, and have grown at a faster rate in math, which is consistent with all of our students at all of the sites. And then the proficiency in math, you can see that historically there's been more of a gap, but at the high school they've seen an improvement for English language learners. But what you may have been seeing when you see this, the reds in this, is that we're comparing ourselves to ourselves, and we're holding ourselves to a very high standards for our student groups. And sometimes these reds may make you feel concerned. But I think it's really important to take a moment to compare ourselves to the general student population and similar populations, and also districts adjacent to us. So when you look here, this is comparing ourselves to the statewide averages. So this is not for students, low-income students of color, but the statewide average in California is 85% graduation rates. We're hitting 98% graduation rates at ECHS Lawndale. A through G requirements statewide, they're hitting 45%. We're hitting 98% in Lawndale. And then attending college the year after graduating, and you can see we go from statewide to nationwide. This is important. This is because this is the data that's available, and Robert has sought it out in multiple places. Again, not for low-income students of color. It's 64% go on to attend college the year after graduating, and we're hitting 85%. Then this is about college attendance and graduation. So for Hispanic students, this is again not in comparison to nationwide low-income students, but this is for Hispanic students. We're exceeding the averages for Hispanic students, for students who both graduate and go on to attend college. And then for African-American students, we're also significantly exceeding the nationwide averages, not similar populations. This is, I think, the data point that is the only one that we're able to get that really compares us to similar schools. Overall, for the students who go to college, we're having an average of 57% graduating from college relative to the national average of 11% for low-income students of color in the country. At our middle schools, we are significantly exceeding learning in all of the local districts. So this is ECMS Gardena. When compared to all of the local schools in English language arts, we're right here at ECMS Gardena. These are all of the local schools that our students would otherwise go to. In ECA, this is also for math. So you can see that our math is lower and that there are some that are getting close to it, but we're still exceeding them. And this is an area of a lot of focus. So right now, this is 2019 data. We have invested a ton of resources and support in this area. And I have to say Charity was really disappointed that we weren't able to do CASP testing so that she can see the impact of her work. And we're optimistic that we'll see more gains in math this year. Again, when you look at Inglewood, significantly exceeding in English language arts and math. But what's really important to note in Inglewood, Robert ran data from all of the districts locally and observed that Inglewood was either first or second, depending on English language arts and math, in the amount of student growth that has occurred in our schools in Inglewood. And then this is at the high school. This compares us to the local high schools right there in English language arts, and this is comparison to the state. And then this is in math at the high school. And again, this is an area of significant concern for us that it's not higher, but it's important to note that it is significantly higher than the local districts and the state. And we've worked on it a lot, so I'm optimistic it's going to improve over time. So with that, I just wanted to pause and ask if there's any questions or thoughts or anything that's coming up for you. And I also wanted to tell you before I forget, because I'm good at that, I added this little note for myself. We're having an end of year celebration on June 10th, and we would love for you to be there. It's going to be with all of our staff, and it's going to be at ECHS Gardena. For those of you who haven't gotten to see the campus, it's coming together, and we would love to have everyone there. It's going to be a lot of food, and hopefully if you can join us, we will send an invitation, but I wanted to put that out there. So any questions about the data that I just shared? I'm going to stop sharing so I can take notes.
I have a question.
Yes.
So going back to the data on the graduation data from high schools, is that based on the beginning freshman class, or does it exclude folks that have exited throughout?
The college graduation rate is based on the students who, is our graduation rate representative of all students?
From high school, yeah, like the high school graduation rate itself. Not college.
No, it's not based on the exact beginning class, because there are some students who switch schools to go to other campuses, and we don't include their data there. We don't have like students who've dropped out in recent years and have reported dropping out to us at that rate. So, we don't include data for students who have switched schools to other campuses.
To other schools outside of ECS,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But even if you take that, that's probably not that big of a number, right? It's still.
There's a number every year, like up to, I think if you look at our strategic priorities benchmark chart, there's a number who exit every year, I think 10 or so that do leave that campus.
Okay. All right. So even if you include that, I still think those numbers are still going to be pretty strong, right? Compared to the district schools.
Yes. Or
other. Okay. And then the other question is, because when people say, I think the outcome of ECS is amazing, first of all, right? So I'm just going deeper, but I think it's the work that ECS does is amazing. But when you look at some of the numbers, like clearly you said the math, obviously 37%, everybody says, oh, we can definitely try to do better. But even in the other areas where you have into the 70% or 50%, that's the struggle. Like, yes, we're doing better, but what is the cap for our population of students? If we hold them to high expectations, how high can they go? I'm sure those are conversations that you guys are constantly having.
Absolutely. And Kennedy, like, I have kids in local school districts myself. And so my aspiration is always for our students to meet or exceed what all of the local affluent districts are achieving. But what I got in some of the feedback was that a perception that we're not doing well relative to local districts. And I really felt that it was important to stop and like appreciate how much our schools are achieving as it relates relative, based on the student population that we're serving, how we're doing. Obviously, we could always do better. And to me, it's really heartbreaking that we have a number of students who start college 1 year and don't go on to graduate, because that's an additional level of debt and stress that they have to carry with them. But nonetheless, it's really important to see how we're doing relative to local districts for that reason.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, any other questions or thoughts?
Just a comment from me. I think the what's interesting about all this data that Farnaz is sharing is this is like the data that we have that we can compare to outcomes outside, like compare our work to what other schools are producing. But I think the to your question or that last thought, Kennedy, about, you know, what's the cap? What are we aiming for? Is it just exceeding local schools or is it more or better or different? I think we've been having that conversation. We've been having that conversation for a long time, but recently the way that conversation is coming out is around critical thinking skills and how are we preparing students for a rapidly changing world. One that we don't necessarily know what it's going to look like, or we're not necessarily even prepared to get them ready for it. But what does it take to do our job nevertheless? And we think, and we're kind of landing on, it's about critical thinking. It's about problem solving and innovation and collaboration. And I think for us, you know, these CAF scores are currently our best proxy for measuring that. But our goal is that all of our students, and our belief is that all of our students can achieve that, and that's what they need to be able to be successful when they graduate from us, going on to college, and then long after that. So I think like that question that you're asking, like what is our target, is it's for everyone, you know, and it's as ambitious as everyone graduating from college or being capable of it. And then how do we operationalize that and make it happen year after year?
And thank you for that answer. And then and I guess the key question is that the team is constantly wrestling with that question, right? Like that.
Absolutely.
That's really, okay.
Yes, nonstop.
Any other questions or thoughts? Thank you, Kennedy. Thank you, Danielle. I'm gonna hand off to the principals who are gonna be doing quick updates from what's going on at each site. Just as a explanation, I asked them to, there is a tremendous amount, as you can imagine, in the world today and with all that's happening with safety now, both safety around COVID, but also what's going on with a school shooting and how it impacts the parent population, how it impacts students and the supports that are needed to provide for them. So as we were thinking about preparing for this board meeting, I really wanted the principals to only share just a tiny little bit to bring you onto their campuses and see what they're holding and what they're seeing. But and if they want to leave afterwards, they're welcome to leave, just because there's so much that they're holding and I really appreciate them. And also just to add that Dr. Geneva Matthews couldn't join us because her mom is dealing with some health issues and she's sort of taking care of all that stuff. So she really wanted to be here with you and I'm sharing that. I unfortunately, who's gonna be sharing the presentation from the principals? Can someone?
I think it could be the principals themselves if they have their screen available.
I can try to go. I'll just have to stop sharing and allow Dave to share once I'm done.
Sounds good. Thank you, Cindy.
You got it. Let me see. You should be able to see. I have too many screens here. Can we see that? That's not it. Let me do the slideshow over here. So I wanted to just take a few minutes, like Farnaz said. I'm so sorry. Nova, stop. Like Farnaz said, there are so many things that we could share. We are 14 days away from wrapping up our first year as a brand new high school with ECS. And there is one thing that I'd like to just share personally. I have experience with our like local districts and other CMOs, both like really large CMOs like Alliance and incredibly like small CMOs with only one school that have not necessarily worked out. And I have never felt that supported anywhere else as I have with ECS. And it is that same reason why I feel Gardena has been able to accomplish all of the things that we've been able to accomplish this year. With that said, we had our own version of what intercession is supposed to look like after collaborating with Danielle and really trying to figure out whether or not we should try to replicate Lawndale. On our first year, we landed on creating a different version for interdisciplinary collaboration, meaning all of our students had a chance to participate, but we selected two teachers to do our interdisciplinary project instead, and we landed on environmental science and art. The beautiful part of that is that we did not only allow ourselves the opportunity to identify our pain points before we do it with two grade levels, but we're also trying and did our very best to create two leaders that are going to be able to support this next year. And after almost 3 weeks of planning, that led up to 3 weeks of students engaging in this interdisciplinary project, the final winner was the Dolores Huerta Community Garden. For those of you that have not had a chance to visit ECHS Gardena, we have done the very best that we've been able to do in implementing the E in ECS. We have a horticulture club that meets twice a week. We have started our own recyclable club, but we have not really had the opportunity to open our doors to the community in a significant way. And so we are really excited to partner up with Allison and some of the judges that participated so that we can begin planning for our Dolores Huerta Community Garden. In addition to that, we also had the chance to go to our first Catalina Island trip. And I would like to say that I get it. And as soon as we came back from Catalina Island, I got on the phone with Allison and I just wanted to tell her that I completely understand the work that we are doing. There is, and Danielle heard me say this morning, like there is nothing more precious to me at this moment in time than to have shared, one, the experience with the kids, two, to see so many firsts in not just like riding a boat, but laying down on the ground, stargazing, something that is that seems so small to us on a day-to-day basis. And yet our 14, 15-year-olds have never had a chance to just stop and appreciate a night full of stars. They've never had the chance to stop and really consider what is the role that they're playing, not just within their home, their community, but within a much larger universe, in a universe and a community that they're creating for themselves. And so I am fully invested, fully devoted, and I will try absolutely everything and anything to continue to give our students the opportunity for an equitable education, despite how long that takes, how many endless hours, and how many like tough conversations we need to have along the way.
Thank you, Cindy. Any questions for Cindy? Dr. Guardado. Sorry. Okay, thank
you. Hi, everyone. I'm sitting in my favorite spot in my backyard. I think my wife is probably pretty jealous because she's in there with the two kids. Yeah, bud, thank you. You can bring it over here. Apparently his iPad time has expired. I just want to name that it was a really heavy week. And I think it's been 10 years since Sandy Hook, and I was a teacher during Sandy Hook, and I'm a principal and a father during this time around. And so, I was telling Danielle earlier today that it feels like, I don't know if I have permission to have a heavy week given the weight that the families in Uvalde are facing, but it's a heavy week nonetheless. And I thought that what might be nice is to just see kids having fun. And so I wanna share our kiddos being kids. And I believe that connection to each other is one of the best inoculators that we can have to disconnection. So with that, you're gonna see to the left in our handwork class, on the left is the image that the teacher presented for the students by the artist named Chaluli as inspiration. And then they worked together outdoors using only recycled materials to make a chandelier. So that's made out of plastic single-use bottles. We don't use a lot of single-use bottles, but we needed them. So kids brought them in, and then we had some whatever we needed to supplement. We let the games and movement teacher give them out as prizes, as cold water, and then we used them. What's not featured there is that as some students worked on the chandelier, others were working on the mural for the eighth grade class that will go up in our parking lot. So when that's done, I'll share that out. But our handwork teacher really treats our students like artists and empowers them, and it's really great. She's also a really good example of a teacher who benefited positively from distance learning. I know we vilified distance learning, but prior to the pandemic, she struggled with classroom management so much. Like, I stepped in and I was like, wow, there's a struggle here. We're gonna have to support her. Distance learning happened and she could focus on just planning. And she became such an effective class planner and lesson planner that since the pandemic, it's 180 degrees difference of like classroom management and what students are able to do. So it's a big, big win. In our Green Ambassadors class, the second semester students get to harvest what students in the fall are planting, what they're working on, and what they're cultivating. So they got to cook sustainable food in class, and they love it. We blew out a couple of fuses in the building, but we're getting the dedicated circuits created, built in, and so we just approved that invoice, so we'll blow out a few less circuits, but the students love it. You go in there and they have knives in their hands chopping things, and it's like back to what Danielle used to tell me about back in the day when Cammie was principal of ECMS Gardena. I think she used to say safety third. I would say safety second maybe, but the kids are having fun. And then on the third, our discipline and culture team has been working really hard to ensure that boredom does not breed mischief or disconnection during break and lunch. So everything from esports, where students are competing against each other, with video games, to tournaments for sports, to music, to trivia. There's a lot more things going on at break and lunch, and we've seen a direct correlation with the drop in discipline. In addition to that, we also had our food vendor switch to family style serving. It would be much fresher, but I that's what I wanted to focus on. I wanted to focus on all the efforts being made for students to be kids and connect with each other.
Thank you, Dave. Do you want me to share screen or do you want to keep going?
No, I was just quiet to see if anyone had questions. I'm done. I guess I didn't have a very good conclusion. In conclusion, I am done. I can share screens and move on to for Casey. I agreed to share screens for her unless someone has a question. I'm really good with pauses though, far enough, so you'll have time to move on.
Thank you, Dave. I love the Chihuly. You can't see the chat because you're sharing, but the amount of joy around the beauty of that is overwhelming. Amazing.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I just wanted to share out some quick data, but I would like to just kind of piggyback off of what Dave was saying. This felt like a really heavy week on top of a really heavy year. And I just feel like with so many changes that kept coming throughout the year with all of the COVID and the safety, like, we finally got to a place where it feels like we can all like breathe a little easier. And then this week happened and it just felt like getting pushed down again. And so that was really heavy. And it's really important that I think that we remember to find joy in things and celebrate the things that are happening that are good. And I don't know, Farnaz, if you shared it with the board, but Farnaz had shared a really beautiful quote by Howard Zinn earlier this week about like finding the joy and choosing to focus on that so that we can't basically like kind of be depleted in our hope and as humans. And so I want to share this so that hopefully this can bring some joy to all of you in the way that it did for me. But basically for this year, coming out of a pandemic, one of the things that kept me up at night was wondering what's going to happen to our seniors and what's going to happen to our juniors, because they just went through a pandemic and they basically didn't have a high school experience in the ways that all of our other students have. And so I really wondered like what was going to happen for them and how will this impact their life trajectories and their futures and their families' futures. And so we've been partnering with an organization called Carpe for a few years now and working specifically on increasing the rates of attendance and enrollment for Black and Latinx students into four-year universities. And so this year, one other big celebration is that this is the biggest senior class we've ever had. We have 125 seniors. And so I think that in and of itself is a celebration because our students stayed with us. Our attrition rates have been going down every year. And so we had 125 seniors, and with that number, 34 of them were accepted and committed to universities of California, 53 committed to CSUs, 12 to private schools, and 22 to community college. And so I think one of the data points that Farnaz was sharing earlier is that we finally gotten to a point where about 85% of our students are attending post-secondary institutions. And I'm really, really excited to report that 99% of our students committed to 4 years for next year, which is about 80% of our entire senior class. And this is the highest it's ever been in the history of ECHS. And the number of students attending college next year will be 121, which is 97% of our student population. So there's gonna be a lot more information diving into the data and the schools, and I'm sure there's going to be some really incredible share outs that Lucy and the counseling team are going to provide to you in a future board meeting. But May 1st was commitment day, and this was all just really exciting preliminary data that I wanted to share with all of you as a way to remind us that we're doing really well by kids. And even in the toughest of circumstances, we've really come through for them. And it gives me a lot of hope for them and their futures in a way that I was really worried about at the beginning of the year. So thank you for all of your support. And I think this is some evidence of how it's all worth it.
Farnaz, did you want me to share?
I got it. Thank you.
You got it.
So since Dr. Matthew, thank you so much, Casey. Thank you. Thank you, Dave. Since Dr. Matthews isn't here to join us, I wanted to just take a moment to celebrate all that's happening on the campus. There was this wellness and health festival. A couple of weeks ago, I had the joy of going with my son, and he came back so intensely proud of the organization that I get to work for, which was a lovely thing to share with him. It was beautiful. There were more than 200 people there. There were vaccinations happening and tons of food vendors and lots of dental checks and health checks and supportive services. And social workers and counselors and people just there delivering all sorts of services and arts and crafts, and they had veggie bags from our gardens that they were taking home. And then also the interdisciplinary benchmarks. A few of you got to participate in the Shark Tank efforts. There were rockets that were shooting all the way off campus. There were a few that I saw that went so far away. They were amazing, and the kids were so excited. So a lot of beautiful joy at ECMS Inglewood as well. And I just want to take a moment to appreciate our four school leaders and the amount of kindness and grace and warmth and love that they show for our students and the way that they approach this work, the way that they communicate. I'm perpetually inspired by them and grateful for them. And also grateful for Danielle's leadership and support of them as well. It's been an incredibly, incredibly hard couple of years, but I think that we have an amazing team of human beings around this table that I feel really incredibly proud of and grateful for. So with that, I want to hand off to Jane Weish, who's going to tell us about the summer reading plan. Thank you, Jane, for being here.
Thanks. Can I share my screen real fast?
Please.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I am here to just give you a real quick, can you guys see that? Yeah, okay. Just a real quick update and to invite you to partake in a fun experience with our staff and students this summer. So built off of the work that our two amazing middle school assistant principals did a couple years ago, Jessica Ramirez Holden and DeLauren Medlin, they had their entire campus come together and read Ghost Boys together. And that was really impactful for students and staff. And so we wanted to bring that back this year and we wanted to add in our two high schools to it. And so really just quickly why we're doing this. We think that having all of ECS come together and read over the summer will support community building and really intergenerational learning that can take place among students and staff when they're talking about the same book as they pass each other on campus. We think that it will also add and bring back some of that reading for pleasure and some of that joy for reading that's potentially been lost the last few years. It will allow sites time to discuss common themes that are coming up in these texts, because we chose these texts really strategically in line with the priority work that we're doing at ECS. And then we also feel that it will kind of be a segue into supporting student learning that can take place over the summer. So what are the books? Here's what we're reading. We've got the options for you. I've got my copies right here. For 6th through 8th grade, they are going to be reading Troublemaker by John Cho. 9th and 10th grade students will be reading American Born Chinese by Jean Luen Yang. And 11th and 12th graders will be reading The Changeling by Victor Lavelle. So if you're sitting here wondering how you can participate in this, I've got my email in here and you also can just ask for an OZ for it. But we would love to have you join in on the fun. So pick a grade level to read with. If you're curious how the novels were selected, we had a team kind of research a bunch of different options. I then narrowed it down into 3 and then we surveyed students. So these are the books that the students are excited about reading over this summer. And we are excited and hopeful that you will join along with us as we do in some ECS summer reading. That's all I got for you. Thanks so much. And thanks for us.
I just want to say thank you, Jane, for being here. I want to celebrate the fact that Jane was the assistant principal at ECHS Lawndale for several years and led instruction there. And this is her first year as our English language arts specialist across all ECS campuses. And she's having a profound impact already. And it's really great to have you present to our board so that they can see you and the impact that you're having. So thank you for being here. Any questions for anyone before we move on to consent agenda items? I want to open up if there's also any appreciations anybody wants to share for any, well, the principal stepped away, so we can, but if there's anything you want to share with Jane before they log off, I want to create that space.
I do want to appreciate everyone. There has been a resounding, you know, sense of grief, of loss this week, and I just want to thank each and every one of you for the work that you're doing. You inspire me every single moment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Janina. I'm gonna go ahead and share screen again and get us back onto the agenda. We're a little behind, but these items could be quick considering I did the presentation on the action item already. So with that, we are, Anthony, you're here if you want to go, or do you want Janina to?
He's asking.
I asked Janina to go ahead, so I'm going to ask her to continue.
Cool. Thank you.
So we have consent items A through H. Do I have a motion to go ahead and vote on these?
I motion to approve consent items A through H. It's Anthony.
Is there a second?
I second, Denise.
Thank you, Denise. Let's go ahead and do we have any discussion on those consent items before we vote? Let's proceed to vote. Betsy?
Aye.
Denise?
Aye.
Madhu?
Aye.
Zina?
Aye.
Anthony?
Aye.
Janina, aye. So we have up next, we have action item.
Can I say Kennedy, aye?
Oh, I apologize, Kennedy. Yes, Kennedy.
Don't worry. Aye.
Thank you. So we have an action item to approve the revised teacher counselor coordinator salary schedule. Do we have a motion?
Betsy moves.
Do we have a second?
Madhu, I second.
I'll go ahead and start the vote with Betsy.
Aye.
Denise?
Aye.
Madhu?
Aye.
Zina?
Aye.
Anthony?
Aye.
Kennedy?
Aye.
And Janina, aye. So up next, we have some ECS board meetings scheduled for June 23rd. Farnaz, do we have any comments or anything to discuss regarding those matters?
This is going to be the LCAP meeting where we're going to go over both the LCAP budget, but also our LCAP MPOs. I do want you to please plan to come on June 10th and meet our staff and see ECHS Gardena. We would love to have as many of you there as possible, so please mark your calendars for that as well. And the committee meetings are scheduled in accordance with the upcoming June meeting. So mark your calendars for those as well, please.
Do we have any appreciations? So we'll go ahead and move to adjourn.
I can't not do an appreciation, so I have to do one little one. This past 6 months, there's been a safety scrum that we hold three times a week that includes Jeremiah, Sarah Jameson, and Danielle. And I think that the partnership that's been developed amongst us, where we meet for 30 minutes and go through a crazy number of issues and shift policies and structures and systems, has been really, really productive and also sometimes fun and often challenging. So I just want to appreciate Jeremiah for your role, always keeping an eye on compliance and keeping an eye on structures and systems to support us, and Danielle for your thoughtful commitment to instruction and always bringing everything back to children and their needs, and Sarah for her focus on employee needs throughout. So it's been a great group, and I wanted to appreciate them.
Excellent, thank you. So we're going to go ahead and adjourn to go into closed session. We want to go ahead and motion to move into closed session, correct?
Yes.
Would like to motion, and I need a second as well.
Anthony seconds.
So Betsy?
Aye.
Denise?
Aye.
Madhu?
Aye.
Zina?
Aye.
Anthony?
Aye.
Kennedy?
Aye.
Janina, aye. Motion approved to move into closed session.
And great. So this is Anthony Jouid reporting out of the closed session. We are making a oral recommendation regarding Firnaz as our CEO and ED. There will be a 9% salary increase, and the other benefits that she's currently experiencing will be maintained. And so with that, I want to make sure we ratify that employment agreement, and we will be doing that offline, but getting a vote that we move forward with the ratification. And so if I can get a motion to ratify, to move forward with the ratification of the employment agreement, that would be great.
So moved, Kennedy.
Thank you, Kennedy. Second?
I second, Madhu.
Madhu, thank you, Madhu. Okay, I'll just go through. Betsy?
Aye.
Janina?
Aye.
Madhu?
Aye.
Kennedy?
Aye.
Thank you. Zena?
Aye.
Denise?
Aye.
And Anthony? Aye. So we will, we have voted to approve the ratification of the employment agreement. So we'll move that forward offline in terms of getting that executed. With that, of course.
I just want to appreciate you all. I feel intensely grateful for the board that we have and your depth of knowledge and your willingness to support our work. And you are all role models to me in different ways, and I go to you for support and thoughtful feedback, and I appreciate this so much. And I told Anthony in the breakout session that while I'm working on a succession plan and continuing to develop the people below me in this org structure, I have no desire to move on anytime soon. I'm in a very happy place. I love this work, and I feel very blessed to get to do it. So I just want to appreciate you all for creating this opportunity, supporting me in this role. Thank you. It means a lot to me, and your kind words mean a lot to me as well. Thank you.
And I shared with Firnaz that, at least from my perspective, and I think the board's perspective and the staff's perspective, that's exciting news. It's fantastic that she's creating a succession plan, but I don't think any of us want to see her leave anytime soon. So
that caused anxiety when she said that.
So,
well,
I'd say
you would be in the best possible hands then too. I have complete faith in the team of people that I'm developing, and but I have no desire to move on myself. So I'm super grateful and appreciate you all.
Okay, with that, can I get a motion to adjourn the meeting?
It's Madhu. I motion to adjourn the meeting.
Thank you, Madhu. Do I have a second?
Janina, I second the motion.
Thank you, Janina. Betsy?
Aye.
Janina?
Aye.
Martha? I mean, Madhu, sorry. My handwriting is terrible. Jesus. Kennedy?
Aye.
Zena?
Aye.
Denise?
Aye.
Anthony, we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone, for your time. And Firnaz, if you wanted to talk about anything regarding the call you had when we were together, let me know.
Thank you. No, I think I'll follow up, and it should be fine. But thank you. I'll call you if there's anything. Have a good one, everyone.
Okay. Take care. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.